Hello, my name is Jim Dye. Welcome to another News Gazette podcast. Our guest today is Samantha Barbas. She is a law professor at the University of Buffalo and considered to be an expert on Hollywood and journalism history. She's also the author of a new book called Confidential, the Inside Story of Hollywood's Notorious Scandal magazine. It's recently out, and I can testify that it is both a very entertaining and a very interesting read. So tell me, Samantha, what's this book all about?
Well, it's the story of the rise and fall of Confidential magazine, which was the first scandalous tabloid to report on Hollywood. And this all took place in the 1950s, between 1952 and 1958. So it's a story of how this magazine took off, rose to popularity, and changed American culture, and ultimately went out of business.
It had a meteoric rise and fall, didn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. It's really kind of incredible, both, you know, the popularity that it was able to gain in such a short period of time, and then how the state was able to crush this amazingly popular publication.
Yeah, it really did. Before we get into the actual magazine itself, let's get into the man behind the magazine. That's a fellow named Robert Harrison. And my guess is that he was kind of a one of those guys who'd like to tweak the nose of the establishment whenever he got a chance. He was in the publishing business before he got into Confidential, and he kind of operated on the margins there, and then he got this idea. So tell us a little bit about Mr. Harrison.
Yeah, so Harrison was born around the turn of the century in New York. He came from a Jewish immigrant family, and he never had much formal schooling. He always wanted to be in publishing. He got his start at the New York Evening Graphic, which was a notorious tabloid in the 1920s. And then he went on to run a series of cheesecake girly magazines that he founded. And these magazines had titles like Wink, Titter, Flirt. I mean, they were really racy for the time. And that wasn't enough for him, though. You know, he had become very wealthy with these publications, but he really wanted to make a splash to doing something that was more controversial. And that's when he got into Confidential, which he envisioned as an expose magazine that would, you know, report scandalous facts about celebrities and politicians going behind the scenes. And he started with that in 1952.
Now, how did he get that idea? Was he just kind of put off by this whole Hollywood image-making machine where the studios portrayed all the actors and actresses as chaste and honest and loyal to their spouses?
Well, that wasn't initially his idea. First, he had gotten really inspired by the Senate hearings on the mafia that were taking place in 1952, in which all of these mob figures were forced to come forward and divulge all of their crimes and misdeeds. And he thought that was really fascinating. The public was absolutely entranced by these hearings.
You're talking about
I could do this.
The Kefauver hearings.
Yeah. And he thought, well, you know, maybe I could do this kind of thing in a magazine, you know, really expose, see me side the underworld and, politicians' scandals. His target initially wasn't Hollywood, but after he had published a few stories on prominent stars, he began to see that there was a real opportunity to expose celebrity life.
And there was a lot to expose there, too, because it was all kind of wrapped in this little bubble of Hollywood public relations. So there were stories out there just waiting to be told, weren't there?
Absolutely. The studio system, when it was at its prime in the 1940s, was brilliant at repressing any kind of scandal. All of the stars, drug use and partying, out-of-wedlock pregnancies, you name it, it was happening all the time. But it never reached the public because the studios knew how to quash it.
Well, they had kind of a partnership with a partnership with a lot of the people that supposedly covered them, which was, we'll give you access and tips if you write the right kind of stories, and if you don't, you won't get inside the door.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they would only approve those writers that they knew would publish positive pieces about the stars. They wouldn't give them access to the stars. They wouldn't cooperate with them. Luella Parsons and Hedda Hopper and all of the columnists were totally in cahoots with the studio.
And it worked.
The most clean cut. Yeah.
It worked out pretty well for both sides, didn't it? Because the studios got the publicity they wanted, and Hedda Hopper and Luella Parsons and all the rest of them kind of got these syrupy stories that the public seemed to really enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a wonderful formula. It seemed to work for quite a long time until Confidential came along.
He really ruined it for everybody, didn't he?
Ruined it for everybody,
So, Mr. Harrison, he was not afraid to really make enemies, I guess. Can you describe his personality in terms of did he enjoy upsetting the apple cart? Was it something that he took perverse pleasure in? Or did he just see this as a business opportunity?
Totally as a business opportunity. Harrison was not political at all. He didn't see his work as really having a social purpose. He just wanted to get rich and be noted as a famous publisher, and he accomplished that. I think there were others on the staff that did, want to expose hypocrisy in Hollywood, but that wasn't his aim.
Now he had some real insight into the market, though, because he spotted something there that other publishers would have leapt onto, if he hadn't. If they had thought of it. I mean, he tapped into this fascination with celebrity, which continues, obviously, to this day. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the fascination with celebrity. I mean, again, I think that the public by the early 50s was kind of growing wise to stars' transgressions. A few of them had leaked out, by the late 40s. There were some pretty big reports on Robert Mitchum's marijuana use and arrest for that. Ingrid Bergman had been in a notorious scandal.
Mm-hmm. She had a child out of wedlock.
And she had. Yeah, yeah. So, by the time Confidential came around, people were beginning to suspect, maybe stars aren't as, wholesome as the columnist presented them. So Harrison capitalized on that sentiment.
One other aspect of this, and we haven't touched on it yet, but I think I'll ask you about that right now, is that the standards at the time were very conservative and prim and proper. And so if you're able to talk about Ingrid Bergman having a child out of wedlock, nobody would bat an eye today. But back in those times, I mean, that was really considered salacious stuff, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that scandal almost wrecked Hollywood. And just going back to your question, I think it was very, very dangerous to publish these stories about Hollywood, indeed, as Harrison found out, right? To have the entire studio system swoop down on him, try to get him jailed and to get the publication put out of business. So I'm sure that other publishers recognize that opportunity. They just weren't willing to take the risk.
But once he started doing that, didn't others kind of climb aboard and say, hey, there's something here, we can exploit this?
Yeah, I think it took a while. Confidential spawned a lot of imitators, but they were sort of fly-by-night magazines. I would say it was by the 60s that really the mainstream media started to get in on this a little bit.
Okay.
But that was long after Confidential had fallen out
of
the spotlight.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll talk about Confidential now. So he tries a few experiments with the mafia stuff and kind of hard-hitting news coverage. And then he says, okay, we're going to try this thing with Hollywood. And so what kind of stories did they write about Hollywood? I mean, I see the cover of your book has Marilyn Monroe on it and Liberace, and I think that's Raymond Burr. How did they all fit into all that? What kind of stories are we talking about here?
Yeah, so a lot of the stories were, somebody is having an affair with someone else. There was a very scandalous story about Rita Hayworth, who had neglected her children and was a terrible mother, this sort of thing. The signature story of Confidential was the outing story. So mm-hmm. They were always, revealing stars' homosexuality, which, of course, was enormously scandalous at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number of prominent stars, Tab Hunter, Dan Johnson, who were outed by Confidential. So those are some of the most renowned stories.
Let's get into one of the specifics about it, because I think it's interesting that Liberace, who was gay, ultimately sued Confidential for writing a magazine article that either suggested or said he was gay, and he ended up winning a libel suit, I believe, didn't he?
No, I think they settled.
Okay.
And I'm not really sure about the details, but it wasn't a clear-cut win for him.
Okay.
That's for sure.
But that was interesting because he was challenging them, and it seems to me like he had a lot riding on that. If he'd lost officially in a court of law, that would have been kind of a disastrous. But okay, there were some really big stories, and I think one of the most fun stories of all was, and by the way, these stories were always written kind of tongue-in-cheek, weren't they? A lot of humor, and a lot of insinuations.
Yeah.
And they use that to kind of get around the libel issues. You wouldn't come flat out and say something. You would just suggest it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, everything was done by innuendo, as you said, tongue-in-cheek. You didn't want to come out and say things directly because that is opening up liability, libel. So, scandalous facts were implied rather than stated outright.
And that was by design because they had lawyers saying, you want to kind of equivocate a little bit here because you don't really want to expose yourself. And that was a way to protect themselves legally.
Yeah. I mean, what is often not known about Confidential is how professional it was. It had the best lawyers in New York, advising them on publication, on libel matters and so forth. And every fact in that magazine was double checked. And, everything was scrupulously vetted. So they were very, very aware of the legal implications of what they were writing.
And for a while, they had the studios kind of cowed into submission. The studios tried to ignore them for a long time. And I think from time to time, they even cooperated with them. They would trade information or do some things to try to protect their larger interests. But Confidential was kind of hard to ignore because it really took off at the newsstands.
Yeah, I think at its peak in early 1955, it had a circulation of 4 million, but then it was estimated that as many as 20 million Americans read Confidential. So yes, it was hard to ignore, especially as Confidential stories got picked up by the mainstream media, and then it was very damaging.
And to put that in context, we're talking Time and Newsweek and Look and Life. They were in the same neighborhood in terms of circulation, weren't they?
Oh yeah, I think Confidential was actually the biggest selling magazine at the newsstands. Now, Confidential tended to sell more at the newsstands rather than by subscription because people didn't really want to bring this into their home. Right? wanted to be known that they were subscribing to this. But yeah, it was a big player in the magazine market in the 50s.
Well, I can see where it had some appeal because it was always written with humor and everybody's interested in other people's salacious activities and lots of pictures. And it was kind of a fun read, although not necessarily something you want your neighbor to know about, as you said. What was Humphrey Bogart's line about that?
Yeah, everybody reads it, but they say that the maid brought it into the house.
probably true. And one of the other things about the newsstand sales was that they were sold at newsstands because they wanted to avoid any issues involving unlawful use of the mails that would leave them open to obscenity prosecutions or libel prosecutions or whatever. So there was a lot of legal thought that went into this whole thing that I think is kind of funny. But eventually he stepped on so many toes that people started to say, well, we got to go after them. And then, of course, there were libel cases, which it's not even if you win a libel case, you still got to spend a lot of money defending it. So that became a drain. And then you had the state of California, at the behest of the studios, kind of declared legal war on Confidential.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of legal fronts that they were working on. They had something I described called a Kraft Committee. That was a legislative hearing in which they brought in private detectives to kind of confess how they had been revealing facts about their clients to Confidential and other scandal magazines. And then there were some criminal charges that were lodged against Confidential, obscenity and criminal libel, and that resulted in a big, star-studded trial in 1957. That was basically the end of Confidential.
Now, one of the funny things that I remember from the story was the wrong room raid where Joe DiMaggio and Frank Sinatra were trying to keep track of what Marilyn Monroe was up to, and they busted in the wrong door, And that story was pretty solid. But I think, didn't Frank Sinatra end up testifying before the legislative committee? And I think he kind of denied that he'd been involved in this misadventure with DiMaggio.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that he lied about his involvement. But as you say, it's pretty well documented that he and Joe DiMaggio, with a private detective, you know, broke into an apartment where they thought Marilyn Monroe was having an affair. Turns out she was in the other room.
She was having an affair, but just not in that room, right? Now, see,
yeah,
that's what I call journalism.
Like the apartment next door.
That's the kind of thing every reporter wants to write about. So let's see. Now, he had tipsters all over town. I mean, there were people everywhere who had contact with these stars who apparently were willing to sell their tidbits of information to Confidential to make a story. Mm-hmm. So you talk about Confidential really working hard to make sure their stories were accurate. I mean, they did have substantial sourcing on these things.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that Harrison set up kind of a research institute, as he called it, in Hollywood, and he put his niece out there to run this fact-gathering center, and they would get all of these, you know, butlers and maids and waiters and hairdressers and other people who encountered the stars and pay them for their stories. And it was amazingly effective. I mean, there were all kinds of people who had all the dirt that they were more than happy to share.
Did Mr. Harrison, did he end up making a lot of money on this thing, or was it a wash by the time it was all over for him?
He made a lot of money, and he lived very well, and he didn't lose any of it, even with the demise of Confidential. So, you know, into the 1960s and 70s, he was still enjoying kind of a regal lifestyle.
Did he ever go back into publishing again after the Confidential craze?
Yeah, he did. He had a really sleazy kind of supermarket tabloid, and I forget the name. It was something like Inside the News, and that never really took off, but he did that for probably about 10 years in the mid-60s.
One of the things I forgot to mention to you earlier about the content of Confidential was that it actually did run some, aside from celebrity stuff, it ran some real public service news articles. Mm-hmm. And one issue was the dangers of smoking, which by that time was not really that widely publicized, of course being denied by the tobacco companies. But he had kind of a crusade going against smoking, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, and I'm not exactly sure why. But you're right. In every issue, there was a public service story, whether it was an expose of smoking or some other kind of product safety issue. He did a series of exposés on the healthcare industry and food industry and so forth. And he often said that we only publish our Hollywood stories so that we can subsidize these public service stories, which wasn't really true. But I think he was proud of that kind of investigative journalism.
That's a pretty good line, even if it's not true. One of the things that I noticed was that he actually had some fairly reputable reporters that wrote for Confidential, but they seemed to write under assumed names or pen names or something like that. So that nobody really wanted to be associated with it, although Mr. Harrison certainly didn't mind.
Yeah. I mean, again, he had a lot of money and he could pay for the best talent. And indeed, some of the best journalists of the time wrote for Confidential, of course, under pseudonyms.
And they were writers, well-known writers for other publications who would just kind of be doing some freelancing. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Writers for the major New York papers, I think, some of the great magazine writers. And I think it was a lot of fun probably to write those stories.
Well, absolutely. You don't get that kind of freedom with the Wall Street Journal.
Right.
Now, Confidential goes away, but the appetite for celebrity news certainly didn't go away. And then what would you say today are the prodigy of Confidential?
Yeah, well, of course, we have the National Enquirer, which has been very much in the news, and TMZ. Is probably most like Confidential, I would say. And Gawker was around for a while. Of course, that went away with the Hulk Hogan scandal a couple of years back.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say really that TMZ, you know, kind of in your face celebrity reporting and the sneering tone, and TMZ is also, I think, very, very legally savvy. They have all their stories vetted and they're very careful. They have a big tipster network, I know, all kinds of informants. So I would say that's really, you know, the main bearer of Confidential's legacy.
Now, Robert Mitchum was one of the guys who helped kind of lead the downfall of Confidential, because he was one of those guys who said, you know what, I'm sick of this, them going after me, I'm going to sue them. And other people basically didn't sue because they didn't want to give more attention to these things that they didn't want people to read about. But Mitchum said he was going to do it, and he did it. Was he crucial to the demise of Confidential? Did he kind of give other people courage to step forth?
Yeah, I think so. As you said, he was the very first to really take a stand and to take the risk. And he got a very famous Los Angeles lawyer named Jerry Giesler involved. And that really gave other stars confidence. And I think there were three other big libel suits against Confidential that followed in the wake of the Mitchum suit.
Now, did they lose those lawsuits, or were they just draining financially?
Confidential's big strategy was that it made sure it couldn't be sued in California, and so the stars had a very hard time filing those suits, or, you know, having them go forward. So I think all of them were dropped, a couple of them were settled, but Confidential didn't pay out, I think, in any level case.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How did you come across this as a subject to write about? And how long did it take you?
Yeah, so it took me probably, I don't know, a couple of years, and there are a few things that got me interested in it. About 10 years ago, I wrote a biography of the gossip columnist Luella Parsons, who was, of course, very involved in suppressing scandal in Hollywood.
She was, yeah.
And that got me interested in, you know, the whole subject of classic Hollywood and gossip. And then I became a law professor after that and got very interested in media law and libel litigation, and that also took me to Confidential.
Now, your biography describes you as being an expert on Hollywood and journalism history. How do you become an expert on Hollywood? Were you like a film buff, or what led to that?
So I actually have a PhD in history, and my specialization was film history. So that
Your specialty was what kind of history did you say?
Yeah, so I did Hollywood history, early film history in the early 20th century. I looked at the creation of celebrity culture and the relationships between fans and stars and the studio system. So I had a lot of exposure to that background.
Now, I just want to give you an example here of a reviewer in the Wall Street Journal. It says, in Confidential law professor Samantha Barbas recounts the inside story of the little magazine that could, with drama, humor, and verb. Ms. Barbas paces her terrific story well, and the book ends with her cogent analysis of Confidential's larger significance. Now, that was a very kind review that the journal gave you. As a matter of fact, that's how I became aware of your book. What does a review like that do for a book like yours?
Well, that's a great question that I'm not sure I have the answer to. I will say that, you know, the sales of the book spiked, in the 24 hours after the release of the review.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
I liked it. Yeah. So there was a little burst in the sales. And, in terms of the esteem that the book was received generally, I don't know, about the effect of the Wall Street Journal review. It certainly made me very happy. I can say that.
Well, the question is now, who's going to play Marilyn Monroe in the movie Confidential, Confidential?
Well,
we're going to get a movie out of this?
I really, or
Mr. Harrison?
I really hope so. Yeah, I think there's a great story. There's so much drama and so many big names. So I would love to see a film based on the book.
Is there anything moving in that direction? I mean, it would seem kind of an offbeat topic, but it might be something that would be a lot of fun for people to make and to see.
I think it would be great fun, and I don't think it's actually that unrelated to the things that are happening today, you know, with the increasing influence of tabloid publications and the Inquirer and our obsession with scandal. I mean, it all seems very relevant to contemporary times.
Well, what are you working on now besides teaching your law classes? Any books in the hopper?
Yeah, I am working on a book, a biography of a founder and major player in the American Civil Liberties Union. So going more towards my interest in freedom of speech and legal history, his name was Morris Ernst, and he was involved in some of the biggest, most important free speech cases in mm-hmm. the early to mid-20th century.
Okay. Well, on that happy note, we will conclude our interview with Samantha Barbas, the author of Confidential Confidential, the inside story of Hollywood's notorious scandal magazine. As I said earlier, it's a lot of fun to read. If you want to catch up on the scandals of the 50s, that's one way to do it. If you want to learn a little bit about American popular culture and its obsession with celebrity, that's a good way to do it. If you want to learn a little bit about libel law, how to avoid losing a libel suit, that's another good reason to read it. So thank you very much, Samantha. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you very much.